Francine. It's Francine, right? Francine, yep. And now Francine is getting us wet. It's going to be a considerable amount of rain, is my understanding.
Freezing.
I hope that the MLG and W numbers about tree outages, tree related outages, do not bump during this next couple of days, and I hope you stay dry wherever you are. Today we have a big show. We got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, and then we got Right of the Night City. Yep, we do that every Thursday, Jeffrey. I'm going to start betting on him. I'm going to take my crisp $100,000 bills, and I'm going to start betting on Jeffrey and Right of the Right trivia. Just sort of a pivot in my investment strategy, Jeffrey, because Jeffrey continues to roll. Today, Jeffrey, if someone can best you, God bless them. If they play honorably, we'll still give them the fabulous surprise. What is the fabulous surprise, Jeffrey?
Jeff, we have four passes plus meal tickets to the 2024 Memphis Greek Festival, as well as four passes to the Mid-South Fair. That's going on September 19th through the 29th. Greek Fest, of course, at the Greek church right there at Sam Cooper by Chickasaw.
Basically, that's basically your social calendar for September. So you've got four passes to the Mid-South Fair, the Lander Center. That's September 19th, 29th.
Oh, we'll also have 901 wrestling tickets
and
to the Mingle with you.
Your dance card is fin. And four admission and meal tickets.
Yes.
For the Greek festival. And passes to 901 wrestling.
Yes.
It's a festival. It is a festival here. That'll be in the second hour. Righter than right trivia as someone tries to knock Jeffrey off of his perch. So that is the lineup today. We also got NFL tonight, by the way. My beloved Buffalo Bills going to the Miami Dolphins, where against the Dolphins, they've won 11 of the last 12. That's what I like to see, man.
And, Jeff, most importantly, you get to play the Dolphins early, but not at a noon game or whatever, 1 p.m.
Right,
Eastern,
it's not,
where
it's
you're on
not,
the opposite
you're not blazingly
sideline.
Blazingly hot. It's not blazingly hot.
It's huge.
So anyway, we'll talk more about that as the day goes on. But we do have really two big pieces of breaking news to discuss, one of which I've written about at the Daily Memphian. You can read over there. I've tweeted out the column. And so we'll start with that one. The other one has to do with realignment and the demise of the Mountain West. The Pac-12 strikes back. And so we'll talk about that as well. But the big news this morning, it's really kind of amazing, is on October 15th, the North Carolina Tar Heels will play the Memphis Tigers in an exhibition. And then immediately after that, the Dawn Staley and the reigning national champion, South Carolina Gamecocks, will play the Memphis Tigers also in an exhibition. This will be televised on ESPNU, ESPN Plus, the ESPN family of stations. It'll be nationally televised. All the dollars raised in ticket sales will go to St. Jude. And the hope is this is the beginning of an event that could turn into, this is their very clear aspiration, that could turn into a regular season basketball tournament hosted by St. Jude, for the benefit of St. Jude, which would be held in Memphis, would have Memphis as a fixture every year with the other teams rotating. That is the news that you're waking up to, is that the North Carolina Tar Heels, who've never played the Memphis Tigers, and technically, of course, after this, because it's an exhibition game, still will not
have played in FedEx Forum multiple times.
They have played in FedEx Forum. The UNC Tar Heels and the South Carolina Gamecocks are not just playing Memphis. They're playing at Memphis, at FedEx Forum, on October 15th, with all the proceeds of ticket sales going to St. Jude. It's kind of extraordinary, isn't it, Jeffrey? Like, that they were able, and we'll talk about how it happened, but they were able to put... people in the media have known this was in the offing, but if you hadn't known because you'd sort of heard rumblings. Who the hell would have put the Tar Heels and the Gamecocks coming to FedEx Forum on your 2024 bingo card?
Yeah, like you said, we've heard rumblings of it, but when you first heard the rumblings of it, you're like, oh, well, that's something.
That's amazing.
There is kind of this stark contrast of you hear this and you're like, man, that's a great idea. And like, that's awesome. And then you think about, all right, well, Thanksgiving, we're going to have the NIL tournament in Vegas that's funded by Qatari money. And it's like, God, I hope something like this could last for
a while. Well, that is very clearly the goal. That is very clearly the goal. And listen, I talked to Rick Shadyac, who is the CEO of ALSAC, of course, which is the fundraising and awareness arm of St. Jude. And they're not even slightly bashful about it. They're very clear that the goal here is to have a regular season tournament. And by the way, there's no question that NIL is a part of this. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. So how does it happen? But here's some quotes from the column from Rick Shadyac, who I talked to earlier in the week. This is an opportunity to bring awareness to pediatric cancer and pediatric cancer research, which we think is critical, and to highlight our city and all the great things that go on between St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and the University of Memphis. We talked for a number of years about trying to do a basketball tournament that would be very similar to Coaches versus Cancer. We also wanted to highlight women's sports. We thought that having the Lady Tigers be a part of this was just as important as having the men. More Shadyac. We've been working closely with the NCAA. We've been working closely with ESPN. So we have all the right parties in play. And if this is successful, we think it can translate into a regular season tournament. He goes on to say, success depends on several things. I'm hoping that our wonderful corporate community is going to get behind us once we make this announcement. Both Chris and I, it's Chris Boyson, who's vice president at ALSAC, and honestly is the guy who created the marathon along with created and grew the marathon into the biggest fundraising event that hospital has every year. Chris and I want this to become a destination event. I don't buy this stuff that won't come to Memphis. I think people will come to Memphis. We've got quality basketball, and we can offer all the amazing attributes that make this city unique. Goes on to say, because I asked him, this event, the way they imagine it, is it's analogous to the marathon and to the golf tournament. And then, yes, those events both raise money for St. Jude, and that's critically important. But they also bring people to Memphis. They're here. They're not events that St. Jude spot. Like, St. Jude is a global name. They could have events in London or Abu Dhabi or Los Angeles to raise money for St. Jude. They have these events in Memphis to bring business, vibrancy, joy, people, all of that to Memphis. And that is partly the hope here. Here's more Shadyac. With ALSAC, as long as I've been working here and having the privilege of being the CEO, I always want to put the spotlight on Memphis. I genuinely believe that St. Jude thrives because it's in Memphis, Tennessee. Over the decades, we've demonstrated our commitment to the city. You see the cranes on our campus. You see two 15-story towers that are under construction. You see the major acquisition that we just announced in the Pence District. These are all intentional commitments to our city and to demonstrate to our community that we're here for the long haul. We've been here for over 60 years, and we're going to be here for the long haul. I want this city to continue to thrive. So they're not bashful about saying the goal is, can we the hope is to grow this into a regular season tournament. They're also not bashful in saying, in order for that to happen, we need fans in the seats and we need corporate sponsors to step up. Right? I mean, in the end,
absolutely.
This is a little bit like back in the old exhibition football games, back when the Liberty Bowl used to host, exhibition football games, and people would pack it to prove that they would support it, and a much smaller extent, because this is about bringing an NFL team. This is about bringing a basketball tournament to town. Those are different things. But this is a little bit like that. It's like, how's this event going to go? And they've created it, and now they want to see they need it to be supported. I did ask about pricing. The ticket pricing, they said, is going to be based on regular season Tiger ticket pricing, essentially. You know, it's not regular season, so in that, but it's also two very high profile teams. And what strikes me, I guess, as much as anything, is at a time when it feels like people can't stop talking about what's wrong with Memphis or what can't happen in Memphis, or to at this moment in history dream up this event and make it happen, it just shows to me, it's the power of St. Jude, absolutely. You needed St. Jude and you needed ESPN and you needed the University of Memphis all working together on this. But you also needed this belief that things are possible. You needed optimism. You know, you needed to not be dragged down by the sense that nothing is possible. And so I just think to have created this out of thin air. And I guess when your DNA is what we're going to do here is we're going to create a children's hospital that takes care of cancer, sick kids with cancer for free. I guess once you do that, everything else looks pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know, but it's really a remarkable. Now, it's an interesting question, Jeffrey. I don't know how it will be supported. Like, this is it's a tumultuous time in Memphis Tiger basketball. I don't think there's as much enthusiasm for Memphis Tiger basketball as there has been. B, you don't have the season ticket base, which is generally when you're selling, like you see a lot of times for conference tournaments that are held here or whatever,
yep.
The crowds are like smaller. And you're like, how are they smaller? Well, they're smaller because from the Memphis contingent, because you don't have the season ticket holders, which gives you a base. Here, there's no base. They'll send emails to the season ticket holders. But so how much enthusiasm is there for the University of Memphis right now in the city, the Tigers? And B, there's going to be no season ticket base here. And so I'll be interested. I would think people would come to this event. See the University of North Carolina and the national champion South Carolina Gamecocks against your Tigers? I would think so. But I'll be a little on pins and needles. I think there's some reason for skepticism. Your thoughts?
What are the dates again?
It's October 15th.
So Sunday. I mean, I'm just always worried about any basketball thing during
NFL
football season.
Yeah.
Again, I'm with you. Like, if this can't get you to go out and see some basketball, I don't know what can.
But it's early to see basketball. It's exhibition basketball. And so I do think some people will buy tickets here. It's a Tuesday, October 15th.
I had September 5th. Okay.
Yeah, it's
all
a
right,
Tuesday.
There we go. That makes me feel better. Because this can kind of like, since we're not really doing madness anymore, like this could be like a
sort of madness.
Yeah.
You could call this your madness.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice if they could put 10,000 people in that building, like real people in that building.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's going to be 18,000
people. I mean, the thing is, putting 10,000 people, that'd be the biggest Tiger game of the last.
Oh, yeah. Even the big ones don't get 10.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, they get,
well, they I think
get
Clemson
7 or 8.
Was the biggest last year.
People feel like it must be 15, but it's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had tip to everyone involved in this. This is... it's just to create something like this. I just think it shows a belief in the enterprise, a belief in the ability to get things done. Now, what's in it for UNC and what's in it for South Carolina? Well, first of all, Dawn Staley is like, she's first of all the biggest. Don't you think she's the biggest name in women's college basketball now, Dawn Staley? Like she's, you know.
Yeah, with Caitlin going to.
Yeah. And she's been a longtime friend of St. Jude. Like, I do think there is, the power of St. Jude is very real here. The power of NIL money is also, like, real here. I saw the Hitman Hoops reported that UNC is going to get $150,000 in NIL money. Like, there will be NIL money. You mentioned the other.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'd rather see NIL money going out like this and raising money for St. Jude than just, hey, we're handing out $500,000 of some Qatari money.
Right. The ticket sales are going to St. Jude, but there will be money. There. You could be, you know, the players will be compensated for this. And it's a way to also raise money, NIL money, not from the ticket sales. That's going to St. Jude. But there will be money available for North Carolina, South Carolina, and the University of Memphis, I am certain. So that is that news. Any other thoughts on that? We'll just hope for the best, you know?
No, I mean, like, to me, it's like, it's ideas. Like, to me, it's like, bring ideas. Yeah. And it's also practical. Like, hey, you know, it'd be nice to sit there and go, why don't we just have a fundraiser for St. Jude? We'll bring in North Carolina. It's like, no, hey, we're going to have to probably have some NIL money here, too, yeah. Like, to make event.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's a realistic thing.
Well, and then, can you imagine what they must have been going through last week when this Penny stuff happened?
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't invent this. They didn't start this Monday, right? So this has been in the works. You can only imagine. And they're making their announcement today. They made it at 8 o'clock this morning. You know, just imagine last week when this Penny stuff was happening, what they're going through, like, oh, my God. Is he even going to be there if there's a new head? Like, whatever. But happily, that seems to have quieted at least a little. And we'll look forward to seeing this unfold. So that was the first bit of big news that y'all woke up to this morning. The second big bit of news is that Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and San Diego State are all going to the Pac-12. They have applied, evidently, already. They are leaving the Mountain West. They are going to the Pac-12. They are paying a substantial amount of money to do this. Of course, Oregon State and Washington State are the only current members of the Pac-12. This will make them the Pac-6, or, as I like to call them, the six-pack.
Uh-huh.
And so there you go. Here's what it will cost. $17 million each in exit fees. And then the Pac-12 itself will have to pay $43 million to the Mountain West because of a deal that they had. They have this
scheduling agreement.
What happened actually is, so they have this scheduling agreement for this year, 2024. And they were negotiating whether we should extend the schedule agreement between the Mountain West and the Pac-12. By the way, you can't trust anyone, can you? Like, in college sports, it doesn't matter. If it's another conference that you're working with, if it's another member of your conference, everyone's out for themselves.
Yes.
This is like, alliances. This is, and you can be stabbed in the back tomorrow. So anyway, here they are. First thing you know, they have a scheduling agreement between the Mountain West and the Pac-12. They're thinking about extending the scheduling agreement. Instead, the Pac-12 says, you know what? We'd rather just take the most important teams from your conference. That would be better than extending the scheduling agreement. But the Pac-12 has to pay $43 million. Now, the Pac-12 is rich because they got their own loot when everyone left for the Big Ten. So they got plenty
and the Big 12.
And the Big 12. So they got plenty of money to throw around. They will be paying the Mountain West $43 million, and each of the departing teams will be paying the Mountain West $17 million. The TV deal, the Mountain West TV deal, runs through 2026. There's some question as to whether this is being announced this week because this is the week that Oregon State plays Oregon, Washington State plays Washington. So there's a sort of a spotlight right now on the Pac-12, such as it is. And so they're making this big announcement. Here it is. These four teams will be leaving. What do you think?
So it's also important to note this new league will not keep its power status. It's going to be considered part of the now group of six.
Right. Well, right. So they got 2 years, right? They've got a 2-year.
So McMurphy's reporting today that it will not be a part of the power structure.
It will absolutely not be.
Correct.
Okay. So what do you make of it then? If you are, what do you think of it from the perspective of Oregon and Washington, and what do you think of it from the perspective of the four teams that are leaving, and then what do you think of it in perspective of the Mountain West? And we'll get to Memphis next.
So if you're Oregon State and Washington State, I can't see how you're feeling like this is a win. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you've...
Isn't it a win relative to not having them?
I think you always knew deep down, like, to me, like, this is like you got your fallback plan.
Yes.
Like, you always knew that it was...
But what was plan A?
I think plan A was to hope that there was a little bit more chaos and you could latch on somewhere, you know...
I still think there's hope that...
Big 12, maybe, and whatnot. I mean, maybe that doesn't necessarily preclude you from that.
Six doesn't get a full conference, and so the question is where are they going to add? And I still think they're hoping for ACC chaos.
Well,
right?
Yes, they're clearly hoping that Cal and Stanford are miserable and
come
won't
back.
Do it. The problem is Cal is broke, and there's no way. Like, that's the other aspect of this. The Pac-12 still doesn't have a widespread TV deal.
No, they do not.
So now you got to go negotiate that. Good luck. And
here's the question, though. Boise, Colorado State, Fresno State, and San Diego State. That's a lot of money to give up to go to a conference that really, well, that, as you point out, isn't part of the power structure and doesn't have a TV deal. That's a lot of money to give up to go join that conference. Do you think it's possible that they either have some knowledge of the Pac-12's grand plan or some optimism about the Pac-12's grand plan? Because otherwise, why would you pay $17 million each to leave?
Because, you know, in the end, like, do I think they have some plan? Sure, but nobody signed on a dotted line. You know what I mean? Like, I think that they have an idea of the schools, and they can probably do the likelihood. I think what you're doing in this move is, all right, is this... In the end, the destination spot we want? No, but it's better than where we are. I think that's kind of the thought process.
I think pretty clearly what they're saying is, and this is something that Memphis should be mindful of. You won't always get perfect, right? You're not always going to get perfect. But what you want to do is be surrounded and be part of and be allied with the best people you can be allied with, right?
Yep.
You want to be with the best people you can be allied with. And what they're doing is they are jettisoning the bottom half of the... They're saying, we don't want to be hang out with the bottom half of the Mountain West. You guys are dragging us down. We'd rather be allied with... You know, we look at UNLV or who else is in there? There's New Mexico.
It's like, more like Nevada. San Jose State, although you could talk me into they eventually get an invite. But, yeah, it's
Air Force.
The problem is Air Force brings a little cachet.
Is Utah State Wyoming?
Yes.
Utah State, we are basically saying, yeah, we're done with y'all.
Yes.
We would rather be allied. You know, it's like being in the lunchroom. You don't want to sit the coolest kids you can sit with, right?
Yeah.
And so they're like, we'd rather be allied with them. This is not perfect.
Well, it's like you want to date the prettiest girl you can.
Or we'd keep reaching for different metaphors. It's like, okay, we're in a lifeboat.
Yeah.
But that lifeboat looks a little less leaky than this lifeboat. This lifeboat has three people who are already perishing and can't row and whatever else.
That one's already capsized.
We're at least there's some capable rowers in this in this lifeboat. And so that's sort of what they are doing. Does this mean anything at all? Lessons, implications way down the road, anything at all for the University of Memphis? Can you see any circumstance under which they would be part of the Pac-12?
Yes, because I can see where, in the end, the Pac-12, their best path to survival is to actually do what has been...
National Conference.
Yes, where we have a West Division, and that's how we help with travel. Because... By all accounts, the Cal-Stanford travel thing is a nightmare, and they haven't even gotten into a lot of the Olympic sports. Like, we haven't even, like, it's just beginning. So, yes, I can see a scenario where you wind up doing, like, a West Division and the East Division, however you want to do it, and you you play it like that. I think inevitably everyone's just kind of got all eyes on the ACC. What's going to happen? To me, the big question is, I think the ACC is going to have turnover. The question is, do they have turnover or do they go the way of, are they just going to go away as a conference? Like, that's to me, it's like, because then now if you're Memphis, okay, you're in this kind of prisoner's dilemma. If you get thrown this lifeboat, do you sit there and go, all right, sure? Or, I mean, this Pac-12 thing doesn't still have a deal. Is this just like
the problem is it is not without cost to shift.
For sure. Right?
If you could just shift and go without paying $17 million, then of course you would do it. I'll just go be with the better people, right? But if it's going to cost you $17 million and you have no guarantee of getting that money back because there's no TV deal, like at least with SMU, they're like, okay, well, we're not going to take money for a while, but ultimately there will be the money coming back, at least they think, as long as the ACC remains.
Right, that would be the greatest irony.
So, that is the problem. But I do think the way this would impact Memphis is that if the Pac-12 ultimately becomes a national conference, and you kind of think they have to, because there's no particular candidates out west.
I don't see
unless Cal and Stanford are coming back, and they're not. So if they become a national conference, might they end up sweeping up Memphis as part of it?
I think it's entirely possible, but I think like that's kind of the thing is like everyone's looking to the ACC. Well, what if Memphis is like, well, I don't know, financially we can make this work right now. Like, let's wait and see. Well, and then what happens if a doomsday scenario in the ACC happens and, you know, the league dissolves? Well, now all of a sudden you've brought yourself into a pool where you're not going to be the front of the line.
It was shocking, wasn't it, when the news, had you heard rumblings of this?
When they were unable to come to the scheduling agreement, and I knew the scheduling agreement was supposed to be like, it was like September 1.
Right.
It's like when they start to announce that, you're like, oh, they don't want to do a scheduling agreement because they just want to take what they want.
Because they're going to pilfer then. This is a cruel world, man. This is Hunger Games stuff.
Yeah, this is dog and dog.
So there you go. Big news on all sorts of fronts today, including the University of Memphis. Memphis, by the way, got another big man. See that?
I did.
Senegal.
Added some depth.
I'm not really, I confess, not that familiar with his game.
I'm not familiar with his work. But JUCO guy, right?
He is 6'10". He's a JUCO player. And so there you go. They have added another player. All right. Today on the show, we got Chris Harrington straight up 10 o'clock. We got Righter Than Right trivia. After that, we got a full slate of NFL this weekend, but it starts tonight with my beloved Buffalo Bills. We'll talk about all of that and more. In the meantime, I will tell you that if you want a tractor, and why wouldn't you want a tractor? Of course you want a tractor. You got a big piece of land, you got a big garden, your bush hog, and whatever it is. If you're in the market for a tractor, forget green, go Big Red. Get a smaller Case IH tractor from Mid-South Ag Equipment. 0% financing right now. They're in stock. You can just go down there and take a look. Highway 302 in Byhalia. It is Mid-South Ag Equipment, Case IH tractor. Exactly what you need. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the remarkable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's get to the NFL real quick. Before we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. We got trivia after that. Righter Than Right trivia after that, where we're giving away like a bouquet of prizes. Four admission and meal tickets for the 2024 Memphis Greek Festival.
That's
four passes
September
to the Mid-South Fair.
September 20th through the 21st.
What's that?
That's September 20th through the 21st.
Yeah. That's the 20th through the 21st. Then the Mid-South Fair is the 19th to the 29th. That's the Landers Center. Four passes to the Mid-South Fair. And then we're going to 901 Wrestling as
Indeed.
Well. It's going to be, we're going to You're going to need a backup. You're going to need to. You're going to need to back up one of those Case IH tractors from Mid-South Ag Equipment to carry away the prize package today. But I thought, Jeffrey, I would. Well, first of all, in the NFL, I really wanted to say this. I thought Jason Smith, talking about the Tyreek Hill stuff yesterday, I thought he nailed it. Because the question was, should the cop be fired? The cop who very, Danny Torres, who very clearly ratcheted things up and was over the line. I think we can all agree on that. Or most of us, maybe not all of us. Most of us, I think, can agree on that. And so the question was, should he be fired? And Tyreek Hill said he should be fired. And as Jason said, he said, you should look at his personnel file. Right?
Yes.
That's the answer. Like, if he has a record of overstepping, and this is the latest, well, then he should be fired, not like as some necessarily as a disciplinary for this. It's because why would you want a cop on your force who is consistently overstepping?
Right.
And this is the latest incident in a history of behaving like that. It's kind of hard to believe it would be an isolated incident, but if it is, if this is the one time he's been written up for overstepping, then, as Jason put it, he said, let's have some grace,
yeah.
Right? Like, it's pretty clear to me that what should happen to him should depend on, like so many of us, the record, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So there you go. All right, we got the Bills-Dolphins tonight. And it's excruciating for me. The Bills have won, less excruciating than it used to be, the Bills have won 11 of the last 12 against the Dolphins, which is just great fun. It is such great fun. There's the Miami glamour capital of the world, South Beach, hot coach. And you got the place where people jump through tables bundle up against the cold. Win an 11 out of 12. It is how it should be. I am, of course, believing that the Bills will lose because the guts of their interior pass defense have been absolutely shredded. They're losing. They lost their best linebacker, their all-pro linebacker, before the season began, and now they lost their all-pro nickel corner in Taron Johnson last week. And it's funny. I hear so much about the Bills pass rush. Von Miller got a sack last week, actually, and Greg Rousseau looks better. But even Greg Rousseau is not typically, he's not a terror off the edge. He's a big, long defensive end who's actually learning to use his length and is a better pass rusher. He was really good last week. He was really good in the preseason. He's not an 18-sack guy. That's just not what he is. I think at home, Dolphins, I think Dolphins win.
So, if you look at the second half, Bills' defense was pretty darn good against the Cardinals. And the Cardinals were very good in the first half. But in the second half, they really were. They gave up 10 points, but seven, which is from the kickoff return.
There were a bunch of wide-open guys he just missed. But
missed a few of them because he was getting harrassed.
How about Marvin Harrison?
He was running for his life.
How about Marvin Harrison Jr.? One catch, 4 yards.
Well, I mean, the other thing is
one catch, 4 yards.
I mean, that guy was he was getting fantasy attention, maybe not Jamar and Justin Jefferson, but in that next tier.
Which is insane.
Yes.
Which is just absolutely insane. Anyway, but I ask you this, Jeffrey.
I know what I'm betting tonight.
What's the line?
2.5.
What are the three most interesting games this weekend? That's the way I would phrase it.
So we're not counting Monday Night Football because we'll be back next week. But we are counting tonight.
Monday night is Atlanta Philly, is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Yeah. I just think right now Cousins, when
the problem is this, is what is interesting?
Yeah, are we talking opportunity for the best, most significant game?
What is interesting?
I mean, I think tonight is on there no matter what. It's a division game against the likely two teams that are probably going to contend for the title.
The only way I would argue...
The AFC East.
The only way I would argue against... Is interesting a really high-quality game, or is it, I want to learn something about this, and my God, if this team doesn't straighten out, it could be in trouble, or whatever else. Is it an investigation kind of interesting, or is it just, I want to be entertained kind of interesting? I guess this one's interesting in addition to a very good game, it's very clearly a good, important game, division, all the reasons you say. One of the two best quarterbacks in the league, certainly one of the three best quarterbacks in the league, and a guy who just got a massive contract, fun offense. Like, there's nothing not to like about this game,
yeah.
Right? And the interest level partly is, can the Bills, as reconstituted, still stomp on the Dolphins?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is this, they lose so much, are they still the beast of the East? So, fine, I can give you interest as well. To me, the ones I circled as the most interesting games this week, and again, my bias is this is the one I'm most interested in tonight, but the two that I circled, Jets, Titans, Browns, Jacksonville, are two that I circled. Jets, Titans, because Aaron Rodgers, don't love him, but I'm interested in him. You know, I from a how good are the Jets going to be? How's this story going to end? What did we learn Monday night? What we learned, I don't think we know. We learned that he looks okay, actually. He shows flashes. It was not determinative. It was not, oh.
No.
It was not Aaron Rodgers is going to be awesome, or, oh, Aaron Rodgers still stinks. He's old. He's washed. I don't think you could say that. And so I'm fascinated. I'm less fascinated by the Titans perspective, because I don't think they're going to be good.
Well, is Levis as bad as he looked on Sunday?
Well, yes. There's a question.
I mean, I it's well documented. I have my feelings.
Yes, yes. You tend to think yes. But so, to me, Jets, Titans, like, if the Jets are going to, it's fine. It's absolutely excusable. Go lose at San Francisco when Kyle Shanahan has a whole offseason to prepare for you. Anyone would, right?
And that defense is good.
Yeah, and that defense is tremendous. That's fine. If you lose this one, get out of here with the Jets, right?
Yes.
So I think that one is super interesting. And then the Deshaun, like, is train wreck interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Like, to me, like, okay, you know, I think that's the real question for me. It's like, if he comes out and he has a bad half, is there going to be a push to play Jameis?
There has to be.
Right?
At some point.
I mean, to me, like, that makes them fascinating. That makes them something you want to watch. But again, those are not two games that, like,
those aren't games.
If you only get to watch two games, like, I'm not going to stump for those.
All right. Well, what's another, in terms of, then if you go the other way in most interesting, how about this one? How about New Orleans, Dallas? What did we see from New Orleans week one? Dallas looked really good. Like, what do we? I
100% think, like,
how about Tampa Bay Detroit is a great game,
which is
potentially a great game. Two of your favorite quarterbacks of all time.
But what's also fascinating is those two lines are huge. Cowboys -6 and Detroit -7.5. I get it, they're both home teams, but it's like,
wow.
You know, what did the, I think the thing that's interesting about the Saints is,
well, that's, you know what that is,
wide sorry.
It's two NFC teams that people believe in, and against two NFC teams that had great first weeks that people don't believe in.
And NFC South.
And NFC South.
Yes.
And they're lumped together in the NFC South.
Correct. Everybody just, like, goes, oh, yeah, that division stinks. But, like, to me, I think the way that the Saints beat the Panthers, like, I think it's obvious to say the Panthers are going to be terrible, but the way that the Saints beat the Panthers was more so than just, like, oh, they just beat a bad team. Like, it's 30-0 in the second quarter. Like, is a team that some people had some optimism about coming into this year, new offensive scheme, is this actually something different? And then I think, like, with the Lions, like, it was a little shaky. Was it week one or, like, I think this watching the Lions try to be someone. It's like the Grizzlies when they were getting chased after they had kind of stopped surprising people. Like, can the Lions still do it when they're not just plucky underdog?
What do you think of the Bengals-Chiefs?
I mean, to me, that's, like, if we're talking about good and fascinating game, like, to me, that's the one, because Burrow traditionally has started slow, but you cannot deny he was, like, clearly favoring his wrist. He did not look comfortable the entire game. He was throwing the ball short. It looked a lot like it did when he had the calf last year and he couldn't really throw the ball down the field. was it also, hey, that offense, when they don't have both T and Ja'Marr Chase, that offense tends to stall out like it did? Is this, or is this just, you know, hey, we overreacted to week one?
Well, I think that's a, I mean, in terms of quarterback questions, the Deshaun Watson one might be the most compelling right now, league-wide. And what's going to happen in Pittsburgh is kind of interesting as well. From the Bengals' perspective, the good news for the Bengals is even if they lose, and obviously they're expected to lose, I don't know, what's that line now? What's that line?
5.5.
So then they've got the Commanders in Carolina.
Yep.
So after four games, they're going to be 2-2, right? Presumably. Presuming.
Yep.
So they're going to level out here.
Of course, I thought they were beating Pats.
Yeah, they don't have to win this game. But, like Canty this morning on the show that precedes this one, Canty was saying he's selling on Joe Burrow because of the injury. He said this is a wrist injury, and a wrist injury of the sort that we don't know how it's going to go, and he is just selling on Joe Burrow. We didn't see him pushing the ball down the field. And then it was also brought up, the second point, that does he need, this is kind of interesting to say, does he need two world-class wide receivers in order to be successful? And it was brought up, hey, he wasn't very good at Ohio State. He goes to LSU. He's got world-class wide receivers, multiple world-class wide receivers, and he's great. And so without two world-class healthy wide receivers, is Joe Burrow great? Now, I think that's a little unfair. I think it's much more wrist than he's a product of his receivers, but that's what people are saying now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more health. But I mean, the other aspect of this is the way that teams have started to play the Bengals, which is don't let them hit those big massive shots. Like, you don't have Joe Mixon this year, too. Like, that's normally, like, Joe Mixon would run the football, and you can run them out of that look, and you can whatnot.
Joe Mixon had a nice game.
Maybe they miss him a little bit. And, like, if you think back to Burrow in his national championship year, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a big part of that offense. It probably got him overdrafted because of, you know, the way that you had to focus on all the other weapons. I still tend to believe, like, Joe Burrow's more than just a product of what's around him, but I mean, there's no denying it was a terrible, terrible performance.
How about this for an interesting one? San Francisco, Minnesota. The Sam Darnold story. Former Niner plays the Niners after a sterling effort in week one. People had crossed off the Vikings, losing J.J. McCarthy. They got journeyman Sam Darnold there. He's superb in week one. Now he plays San Francisco. And by the way, if you look at their schedule, Minnesota's, it's really daunting coming up. It's not just San Francisco. They got a bunch now that's going to be tough on Sam Darnold. But I don't know, like, is if we're wondering, you know, pick a quarterback. Are they as bad as they looked that week, Joe Burrow, whoever? With Sam Darnold, it's the opposite question.
Is he as good as
he looked? Good?
Yeah. Was he a product of the Giant playing the Giants?
Right. Is he as good as he looked last week?
Yes, so they have Texans. Now, looked a lot more daunting. The Packers, to me, like, are another interesting aspect.
That's true.
Like,
what are they doing? Packers are going to run on Malik Willis.
Right. And if Malik is what I suspect Malik's going to be, are they going to be on the trade market? Are they just going to, like, they're in this weird spot of, can you really afford to go like 0-5, 0-6 to start? Like, well, to me, like, that's another fascinating aspect of it. Because they play them
in that division?
Yeah.
No.
But I mean, who's on the market? Who can you go get? I mean,
Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
Would you have? It is funny. They're all old Titans quarterbacks. Yeah. They're just all old Titans quarterbacks recycling through there.
I mean, can you try to trade for Flacco? Is it the Colts now?
Flacco's with the Colts now?
But I mean, if you're the Colts, can you really afford to give up your backup?
Not the way he plays. It is a fascinating week for the NFL. It feels like every week is a fascinating week for the NFL. Other things I wanted to get to, because we got Chris Herndon straight up at 10 o'clock, and then we have writer, then write trivia. There's a college game tonight. Kenny Dillingham's Arizona State team is going to Texas State, Jeffrey. Is Texas State a threat in the group of five?
I mean, you have to say at this point, yes. But what we've seen in that league is that no one really kind of runs away with it. But, I mean, it is fascinating now. It's Texas State's a favorite.
Texas State's the favorite?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Shohei Ohtani, 47th home run last night. He's good. Debate numbers are in. 67 million people watched that debate. It's interesting because I know a lot of people who just didn't watch the debate. You know,
like, I know more people that didn't than
that's
did.
What I'm going to say. Well, of course, there are, 350 million Americans, so it makes sense. There's more. But 67 million is a big number.
Massive.
And it is a lot bigger than the number that watched the first debate, then watched the Biden-Trump debate. So 67 people watched the debate. Obviously, Taylor Swift, at the end of the debate, as it ended, she endorsed Kamala Harris. That, I'm surprised this number is actually as small as it is, Jeffrey, because she embedded a link in her social media to vote.gov, I guess, or whatever, right?
Yeah. And to register.
It drove 337,000 people to that website. That doesn't strike me as a lot of people. If you're Taylor Swift, right?
Yeah, I just wonder how many of her followers are under 18.
Well, that's true. A bunch are 18. And also, you can, even if you're a fan of Taylor Swift, and even if you're then going to vote because that's what she wanted, you don't necessarily need to click that link, you know, whatever. So there,
yeah, I've just
there
never also bought that the celebrity endorsement leads the kind of traffic that I think
it's interesting in a race that is this close, like very clearly every vote matters. And so, but I mean, you know, like Taylor Swift is not a kingmaker here. She endorsed Phil Bredesen for governor of Tennessee in 2018. He did not win as governor of Tennessee in 2018. So she's not going to, you know, be the tipping point here, but I think the way that I think every vote matters, they were certainly pleased to have it. We have on the golf front, Jeffrey, we never talked about this, the made-for-TV event between Rory and Scottie Scheffler against Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka that will be in December, a made-for-TV event. What did you think of that? Rory talked about it. The reason I bring it up is Rory talked about it yesterday,
yeah.
Said it was not, quote-unquote, sending a message. I think every golfer wants to get this done. You don't have to send that message, but it is interesting. I don't imagine early on they would have done this. Okay.
I think the big golfers.
The big golfers. That, there you go.
Yeah.
Early on, they would not have done this.
No. And
during the Cold War, right?
The bigger news to me is that these events still kind of have to get PGA Tour approval. This would never have been approved.
Once upon a time.
I think even last year, it doesn't get approved. And now they're at least...
The fact that there is they're acknowledging that they would like to work together. So there you go. All right. We got Chris Harrington coming up next. Then we got Writer Then Write Trivia. Before then, talk a lot about Leaders Credit Union. Tell you all the reasons you should go to Leaders Credit Union. Tell you about the better rates. Tell you about the better technology. Tell you about the fact that they exist only for the benefit of their members. They're not paying out stock dividends or anything else. They're also honestly just good people. And I say that because just recently they won the Louis Herring Philosophy in Action Award. And they won the Desjardins Financial Education Award. Those awards given to leaders for their dedication to their members and community in providing quality financial education and services. So it's not just that they're a great bank. That's in the end, great financial institution. That's why you'd use them. But it's kind of nice to know that they're rolling up their sleeves and doing good stuff in the community as well. To learn more, go to leaderscu.com/ESPN. leaderscu.com/ESPN, or visit their branch in Bartlett or their mortgage center in Atoka. All right, we're going to take a break. Back with Chris Harrington on the other side. It is Jeff Dawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste.
or if you overcame.
Two more rings, two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Few things I wanted to get to, Chris. One is, do you see Bob's? We have a piece at the Daily Memphian on Bob's, which is always an interesting name. Bob's Barksdale Restaurant. It's not Bob Barksdale's restaurant. It's Bob's Barksdale Restaurant, a place that which I knew you were a fan of. It closed. It's going to reopen under new ownership, etc. You are a fan, are you not, of Bob's Barksdale Restaurant?
Yeah, I wrote a thing. I have no idea whether I haven't seen the story. I don't know whether it's, I haven't seen the published story. That's all I did in the system. I don't know whether what I wrote a few years ago is linked in our story, but I wrote a piece on their country ham breakfast a few years ago.
Why is it Bob's Barksdale Restaurant?
If I remember correctly, there was an ownership change at one. So it may have been Barksdale Restaurant. Then there was an ownership change, and a guy named Bob Henry, I believe, became the owner. And so then it was Bob's Barksdale Restaurant. I believe that is accurate.
So it's been shut down.
I don't think Bob, and it was owned by, I believe, his wife until now.
Beth.
Yeah, and so I don't think he was the original owner. I don't think he started the restaurant.
It's been shut down since a fire in the kitchen on June 3rd. Was also shut for 80 days during the pandemic. And in June 22, this is like a no good, very bad decade. In June 22, a three-car accident on Cooper put a Chevy Corvette in the doorway of Bob's Barksdale.
It is or was. Maybe will be again. We'll see. But it's not like a classic, like a particularly southern version of like a Greasy Spoon diner. You know, the wood paneled rooms and the old, like, you know, college football newspaper clippings, and, you know, your coffee is just going to be in a little small porcelain mug, and, you know, biscuits and gravy and country hams on the menu. So, you know, it's, you know, your classic like American diner kind of thing. It's the specifically southern version of that.
The buyer wants to bring back the 9 employees left idled by the fire, including longtime staffer Bert McElroy, Debbie Miller, and Carol Austin, I guess it is, or Austin. McElroy has been working for an estate sale company since the fire. Jerry Stampson Sr. opened the Barksdale in the early 1950s. So there you go. Hopefully it will reopen and flourish. So as you were coming on the show, I was thinking we got 2.5 weeks before the Grizzlies will reconvene. If you were the czar of the NBA, and if the only thing mattered was your preference, that's it. Not dollars, not anything other than your preference. When would the season start and when would it end? Are you ready? Are you itching for NBA basketball again? What would you do?
I am not someone who like just wants it to start on the Christmas or whatever. I mean, so many of the things are about like agonizing over like not getting in the way of football, which I can appreciate objectively.
Right.
But if you're asking my subjective opinion,
just you.
Like, I don't care.
Right.
And so I care more about the basketball. I don't really care about it in relationship to other things. You know, I would assume not have Christmas Day games because I would rather like, you know, hang out with my family than watch basketball. But that's me.
Right.
I'm fine with it starting when it starts. Honestly, I don't have a lot of quarrel with the shape of the season.
Right.
You wouldn't have 82, right?
You'd make it shorter.
Well, I would keep the same length of the season, generally speaking. And the same, like, you know, start end dates for the most part, I think. And I have to think about this a little bit in terms of when the playoffs are.
Right.
I'm thinking about, like, I don't mind when the season starts, but do I want the playoffs to end? Because I've had a lot of issues with family vacation stuff around the playoffs. So maybe I do want to alter it a little bit.
Maybe it should end in May.
Maybe so. Maybe start a few weeks earlier. Yeah. And end it in May, and then shrink it down to like a 65-game season or something like that. That's probably what I would do.
Take June, July, and August off, and basically have it be September to May.
There we go. I think we've solved this. This is what I would do.
I think that's probably right. And have it a 70-game season. Is that enough?
It's a school year season.
Yeah, it's a school year season. 70 games, so you have fewer back-to-backs. You have left. That's how we're going to solve the whole the whole, you know, whatever, the game man and management.
I mean, we could make the first round of the playoffs five games. I don't think they want to do that. I think they want to get as many playoff games as they can.
Would you keep the individual play-ins? Yeah, keep the play-in?
Yeah. I'm in favor of a long season with fewer games and roughly the similar shape. I do think I've talked myself now. You know, you didn't warn me about this ahead of time, as you typically don't. I've had to sort of think out loud my way through it. I'm fine with when the season starts. I don't think it starts too soon, but I would rather not go as deep into the summer. So I like the September to May, something like a 65 to 70 game season, and let's go.
And I'm with you. No Christmas Day, and we're not gonna have it on Christmas Day. They should consult us. Okay, but we do have 2.5 weeks though before this actually fires up. So I'm gonna ask you this: what? And I'm sure you'll write about this when it comes. In terms of not just the starting lineup issue, but deployment issues. Like, what are to you the those start with the biggest. Maybe this is all we'll get to today. Maybe we'll do other ones other day. What's the biggest deployment issue you think that the Grizzlies have this season? Go ahead.
Drew and I did a pod yesterday, and when this is the main thing we talked about. So I'll do a little bit of shorter version. I think he's writing something along these lines like this week, and I'll write in a few weeks later than that. But, you know, to me, I just assume Zach Edey's starting, and I think he should start. And so to me, the biggest starting lineup question is the fifth guy,
right?
Which is to me is a Marcus Smart or Vince Williams question. And that is not just about, like, who's the better fit in this starting lineup, because the starting lineup, that's a five-man unit, it's only going to play so many minutes in a game. So it is related to this question of, like, how you manage your rotation and your lineups throughout the course of the game. And so I think even with G.G. Jackson out, if you're throwing Scottie Pippen Jr. into the mix as a backup point guard option, there's still too many players for a rotation, even with G.G. Jackson out, I think. And so there's this real question of, like, this backup point guard role, or more, I guess, more specifically, how do your backcourts work when John Morant's not a part of them? And so, to me, I think that's one of the biggest questions for the team is, what kind of lineups are we playing when John Morant is not a part of those lineups? What works? What doesn't? And how does that impact who we want to start and who we want to be in the rotation? Like, that question may impact whether you want to start Marcus Smart or Vince Williams, you know, because like, who do you want coming off the bench?
Right.
Who do you want in the game when John Morant goes out? That kind of thing. So I think navigating the non-John Morant minutes is the trickiest thing.
So it's not even – it is interesting because we normally look at it from the front to the back, like, who do you want starting? But actually, as interesting is, who do you want – and which may dictate it – who do you want in those non-jaw minutes, and
when Ja goes to sit down at the 9-minute mark or whatever it is, who do you want on the floor?
And who do you want handling the ball? And what do you want out of that position? So what are the options? Yep. What do you see as the
To me, I would go from there to another sort of broad question, and do you need a quote unquote point guard on the floor or not? And in this conversation, I do not classify Marcus Smart as a point guard.
Right.
I do classify Scottie Pippen and Derrick Rose as point guards. I make a distinction there.
Right.
And so can you function without a point guard? Because you're going to have to play a lot differently. Because, like, if Marcus Smart is, like, you know, nominally your point guard, he doesn't play like John Morant. He's not getting to the rim.
Right.
And so this idea of your point guard is handling the ball a lot, is running pick and roll, is getting into the paint, touching paint, as Taylor Jenkins would say, and things sort of flow off of that. That's not happening if Marcus Smart is sort of your primary ball handler, whether you call him a point guard or not. Scottie Pippen plays more like that. Like, Scottie Pippen obviously is nowhere close to as good as John Morant, but if you want to sort of emulate the style, Scottie Pippen's going to emulate the style more. And so, I think that's a real question. Like, what backcourts work that don't have, you know, Pippen or Rose in them, that don't really have a point guard? I think the Grizzlies feel like, among the grouping of Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, Vince Williams, Luke Kennard, those four, I think they feel like most, if not all, of those combinations as a backcourt will work for them in the flow of the game. To me, I'm a little less certain about that, but to me, that's one of the real questions. Like, is it Desmond Bane, Luke Kennard together, you know, as a backcourt with Desmond Bane basically being the lead ball handler? Is it Bane Smart, which is what they started with last season when Ja was out? I'm skeptical of, like, Smart, like Williams or whatever in a backcourt, or even Smart Kennard. And so maybe it's a question of, can you have Ja Morant and Desmond Bane both on the bench, and then what works? I think if you're doing that, you almost have to have Scottie Pippen out there.
Who's and maybe this, because they're not really, like, do we, as a point guard, what do we know about Desmond Bain, Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, Vince Williams, like, in that role? It was such a mess last year in so many ways that it was even hard to judge.
Last year was hard to judge because the samples are so small and the lineups were such a mess. You got to really be careful with looking at, like, say, stats from last season and drawing, you know, conclusions on them. I think you got to be real careful about that. Desmond Bain, I think, is the best of those four at getting into the paint and getting pressuring the basket, actually. He's definitely the best, like, off-the-dribble shooter. He's improved as a passer. I think Desmond Bain's the best point guard of those four players, but he's not a point guard. Right. I think Marcus Smart can guard the position and is a good passer, but he just can't break down a defense anymore. So him is more of like, you know, like almost like backing in and throwing up little jump hooks and stuff like that. Or I don't feel great. I think you have to play a lot differently if he's like the guy bringing the ball up. Vince Williams, like, was surprisingly good forced into that kind of role, but as much as I'm a Vince Williams fan, I don't have faith in that. I think Kennard and Williams is more as guys who are decent passers on the wing. They're not really playmakers. And so I really think there's a spot for Scottie Pippen Jr., who is, like, you know, the 12th man on the totem pole or whatever, or 11th with Gigi Jackson out, might just force his way into the mix.
Well, it's fascinating for all kinds of reasons. Because, A, if Marcus Smart isn't good in that role, maybe that pushes him into the starting lineup, which isn't ideal anyway. Like, that's not most people's ideal starting lineup, but maybe that's the best use of Marcus Smart. And then, if in fact Scottie Pippen forces himself into that role, as you pointed out, there's who falls out? Yeah, like, there's not enough people in rotation.
And maybe right now, with Gigi out, it closes off opportunities for Jake LaRavia or John Conchar, which you could live with, but you're just so small at that point. I mean, part of the idea of LaRavia is, like, at least he's like 6'8". Like, they are pretty small. And so if they're playing Scottie Pippen, let's say Marcus Smart starts. If they're playing Marcus Smart 6'3", small forward, and then off the bench, they're bringing Scottie Pippen, Luke Kennard, Vince Williams. That's a really, really small team.
I saw that Parker Fleming tweeted about it, and the way he phrased it was, this is basically some version of this question, where's the offense coming from when Ja's not? Like, what's that going to look? And sort of that's where you began. Like, what is the offense going to start with? And I don't know the answer to that. Where is the offense going to come when Ja's off the court?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that will be interesting to me to see, and this sort of flips to the front court with Jaren and Edie, because I think Jaren and Zach Edie can both generate offense in different ways. Edie, like, dump it into the block. Jaren off the bounce. He showed that last year. And so maybe you look to run stuff a little bit more through one of those bigs when Ja's off the floor, but which one, right? Are you going to handcuff? I think I talked about this yesterday. You're going to handcuff, you know, Ja and Edie a little bit, and maybe, like, you know, when Ja's on the bench, Jaren gets to cook. Or are you going to have a situation where maybe you're playing like this young, like, you know, Scottie Pippen, you know, Zach Edie kind of thing off the bench, and like you're doing more like dump it into the post. You're doing the same pick and roll stuff you do with Ja, but you'd run a little bit more post stuff for Edie. I do think there are opportunities to like play differently and like, you know, go through the bigs a little bit more.
All right, Chris, I appreciate it. We will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Do you have a preference, Jeffrey? Would you be surprised to see Scottie Pippen Jr. in the bounding off the bench with the second unit? I would not have thought that's what would happen early on, just because where he is in the hierarchy.
Yeah, I think, like, in meaningful games, I think he's the one that I would say, if we're going to have backup point guard, like, that's the one that I would like getting the most minutes.
It's going to be kind of interesting because then we and of course we automatically, I think everybody right off the top discounts Derrick Rose, but I have said before, it may take a while to get there, so it may be that early on in the season there will be a point guard with that second unit. Yep. I know most people don't believe this, but I do not rule it out that there will be a point guard with that second unit. And the point guard with that second unit will be Derrick Rose.
I definitely think to start the season.
I think to start the season, that is...
Now, is that the
very
case
possible
in December?
We'll see. We shall see. Kevin Street is going to join us in the next segment. We have a whopping prize package and Righter Than Right trivia, where the task is either to be righter than right, that's hence the name, or it is to play honorably. Easier to do. And if you can do either of those things, for admission and meal tickets for the 2024 Memphis Greek Festival, that's the 20th and 21st of September, and four passes to the Mid-South Fair, that's September 29th to 29th at the Lander Center, and tickets to 901 Wrestling. So, all you got to do is be, it's going to be a doubleheader, the St. Jude. It's going to be South Carolina and UNC coming in here for the St. Jude event. So we'll take caller number 2 in the honor of the big doubleheader. 445-0929, 445-0929, if you want to win that massive prize package. Kevin Cerrito joins us next. In the meantime, speaking of two, NFL Week 2 is here, and you can start the season with a big return on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're new to FanDuel, get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's right. Do it for tonight. Bills, Dolphins. Bet $5 and you get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. FanDuel is, of course, official sports book partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. We'll play Right and Right Trivia when we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN on a Thursday. All right, joined now by Kevin Cerrito. Kevin Cerrito. Czar of Fun and Games in Memphis, Tennessee. Kevin, what do you got going on?
Well, that key to the city now in the hands of Glorilla, who got it on 901 day.
So, yeah, so I got a sense they got, they must make a bunch of keys, you know?
Right.
They
got
must,
lots of keys out
they
there.
They got lots of keys. I'd like a key. I'd like a key. Anyway, so Glorilla got
one. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, when did Glorilla, got one when? Glorilla.
Glorilla, on 901 day. Yeah, she was back in town and. The mayor presented her with that at one of the 901 day celebrations recently. She well deserved as a native of the area, repping the 901 everywhere she goes. But we've got some fun stuff happening next week. I mentioned it yesterday on Jeffrey Wright and Company, but we have a special sports trivia. So everybody who tunes in here every week knows we rarely have a sports question during Righter Than Right trivia. But our regular trivia nights throughout the week, we have about 1.5 on average every single night. But next week, we're doing a night of all sports trivia out at the High Cotton Tap Room. That is Tuesday night next week, September 17th. As always, it's free to play. The winning team will get a gift card to High Cotton. Plus, we'll qualify to play for that $1,000 cash during our Tournament of Champions coming up in January at Lafayette's, brought to you by Jack Pearl's Chicken and Feeling Memphis. So sports trivia, get your all-star team together for all sports trivia Tuesday night next week. You can get information at CerritoEntertainment.com.
Jeffrey, do we have a competitor for Righter Than Right Trivia?
We do, Jeff. We welcome Matt and Cordova to the program.
Hello, Matt. How are you? Oh, you're kind of breaking up. Say that again.
I'm doing great today, okay. Sir. Thank you.
Much better. Thank you very much. I'm going to hand things over, Matt, to Kevin. May the best man win. Go ahead.
All right, this is Righter Than Right Trivia. Your job is to get more right than Jeffrey in order to win, but all you really got to do is play fairly in order to get the prize. You're going to get a choice of two categories. Whatever you don't choose will automatically go to Jeffrey, and you can steal from him one time if he misses a question. If you miss a question, he can do the same to you. We're going to shake things up just a tad here today. The Cerrito Entertainment newsletter went out this week, and of course, we always give you questions here on the radio for free. If you're playing trivia, you can tune in and get multiple questions that could help you out at a trivia night over the next week. We're still doing that today, but we're just going to go general knowledge trivia today. I thought, well, let's see how Jeffrey does. We'll have some current events in here, but we'll have some non-current events, and to see if Jeffrey's better at that or worse at that, because that's
Kevin's experimenting for
anything
ways
to throw Jeffrey off.
Experimenting for
you
ways
know,
to,
whatever
to,
we yeah. can. Exactly. That's a good idea. Good idea, Kevin. Yeah.
I'm doing my part. I want the listeners to know I'm trying over
here. I gave there's, you a job. You know.
All right. So let's.
This is fair. We're trying to keep this game very fair. All right. So here we go. So there's going to be some current events scattered throughout But it is just general knowledge trivia. All questions that you might be able to hear over the next week at Cerrito Trivia events on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Okay, categories we're going to start with: famous duos or famous bands?
Let's go famous duos.
Famous duos. What is the last name of the father and son duo that will host the 76th Emmy Awards this coming weekend?
Is that the Levys?
Yeah, we will. Yes, yes. Eugene and Dan Levy will be hosting the Emmys this Sunday. Points.
That's 1-0. 1-0.
I was ready to pounce too.
You look ready to pounce. Yeah.
But that was great. That is a great job by the Emmys there. I think that's great, smart decision making there to have those two guys. All right, famous bands. Famous bands. We have Emily Armstrong will be joining what musical group in their first album and tour since the death of frontman Chester Bennington in 2017?
Linkin Park.
Linkin Park.
Just casually.
Correct.
Just casually ties it up. 1-1. We got a humdinger underway. Matt. Is next.
All right, we're going to break out of current events here. Science or cinema for you, Matt?
Let's go cinema.
In what Star Wars film did Darth Vader first reveal to Luke Skywalker that he is his father?
You better get this.
That was Empire Strikes Back.
That was Empire Strikes Back. Points! I know Jeffrey would know that one, probably.
Yes.
Jeffrey, you get science here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, part of the strategy of the game is picking what you get and what Jeffrey does not get. What major organ in humans can fully regenerate in a few weeks, even if 80% of it is lost? It's a major organ in humans that can fully regenerate in a few weeks, even if 80% of it is lost.
I'm between two.
Which of the two? Talk it out.
I'll say liver.
Oh, you don't want to give him the. You don't want to give him.
You just want to give the other option for a steal.
For a steal. He said you go. You went with liver.
Liver is correct.
Liver is correct. 2-2.
This is great news.
Back and forth they go. All right, back to Matt.
Matt, you want countries or country music?
Countries.
Countries. What nation has borders on Laos, Vietnam, and Thailand? So we're looking for the name of the nation that has borders on those three. We have Thailand, Vietnam, and Laos. L-A-O-S.
Okay, Laos, Vietnam, and yeah. Thailand. Indonesia.
That is incorrect. Jeffrey, you can't steal.
I don't
want to use it or no?
I don't feel 100% confident. No, I'm not going to steal.
Now, your correct answer is Cambodia.
Okay, good.
All right, but there's an opening. There is an opening here for Jeffrey. It's still 2-2.
2-2. Country music for you, Jeffrey. Dan and Shay, Kenny Chesney, and Joe Nichols all had hit songs with what type of liquor in the title?
Tequila.
Tequila is correct.
That's 3-2. All right, and our final round of regulation. Over to Matt.
Matt, board games or video games?
Let's go board games.
What compound word is the highest title a chess player can achieve short of a world champion? It's a compound word. It's the highest title a chess player can achieve short of world champion.
Grandmaster?
It is Grandmaster, yes.
Matt is formidable. I got to say, Matt is formidable, Jeffrey, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's tied up. But you've got a chance to take the lead before we go into the final round.
Shout out to Brian Christopher. They're the greatest chess player of all time. And the sexiest, Grandmaster Sexay. All right, we have video games. What is the most current PlayStation console on the market, Jeffrey?
5.
5 is correct. What's the score?
Yeah.
We're all tied up at 4, right?
No, you took the lead.
Oh, yeah,
you
just won.
You took the lead. 4-3. 4-3 is the score. Let me see how many Jeffrey's going to wager in our final round here. Jeffrey, okay. Matt, how many you want to wager?
I'm all in.
You're all in. Jeffrey wagers 3, so we'll start with Matt.
Both can steal, by the way.
Yeah, steal's still available.
Oh, wow. The final category is pets. None of our pets. Love them. We love our pets. So pets is the category you want, A or B?
Go A.
Matt. Matt's going with A. Snuffles is the family dog that briefly changes his name to Snowball upon getting IQ enhancements and a robotic suit in what animated TV series?
Is that Rick and Morty?
That is Rick and Morty.
God. That's six. He takes the lead. He forges into the lead. Jeffrey has to hit or lose.
Jeffrey, did you know that?
No, I don't know. I thought it was Futurama.
Yeah, it's tricky. And like Snowball, I think, is the involved with the Simpsons cat, maybe. So, yeah, that's an interesting question. Okay, well, here we go. This is a lot on the line here. Could Jeffrey go down on this September day? Calvin Coolidge's pet Rebecca was what kind of uncommon domesticated animal?
Believe. All right. I'm pretty sure raccoon.
Raccoon is correct.
Oh, he pulls it out. What a thrilling match. Back and forth they went. It's one of the all-timers. We only had one missed question, period, I think, right?
The map. The what? Map. Yeah, the maps question.
Yeah, that's it. The maps. Maps always give you trouble, Jeffrey. Anyway, Matt, congratulations for the valiant performance, Jeffrey. I take it you're going to give him
indeed
the bountiful
prize.
Indeed,
well played,
pay.
My friend.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Kevin, where do people find you, and where you and your people will be presiding over Fun and Games this week?
Yeah, you can find me and my team of hosts, which includes Connor Dunning. You can hear from us on the Gabe Kuhn Show every day. Connor's going to be out at Hampline tonight, and some of these questions will be out there as well. We're at Hampline, a brewing company. We're in South Haven at Dan McGinnis, South Wind at Huey's tonight, and Evergreen Grill in Midtown. It's raining, so just come inside, play trivia, have some fun, and win, because you know the answers to quite a few of the questions that you will hear later on today. SerenoEntertainment.com, that's where the full schedule's up.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Obviously, the big news today, which broke shortly before we came on the air, was the news of this terrific doubleheader, which is just kind of amazing, really, that the North Carolina Tar Heels, who've never played the University of Memphis in men's basketball, and the South Carolina Gamecocks, went the Lady Gamecocks. I don't think they call themselves the Lady Gamecocks, the Gamecocks. Never liked Lady. Just, they're the Gamecocks. The Gamecocks. Defending national champion Dawn Staley as head coach. Both of those teams, those two massive brands, will be playing the Memphis Tigers, the men and the women Tigers. And they won't just be playing them. They'll be playing them in Memphis at FedEx Forum on Tuesday, October 15th. All the money raised, all the ticket sales, all the money from the ticket sales will go to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Games will be televised on the ESPN family of stations. It really is something that is remarkable that they pulled off. And I celebrate it, not just because the event could be great, not just because it'll be fun to see. It's good for Memphis to have another, you know, we knew they had one exhibition game left, right?
Yep.
And this is how they're filling it, and you can't imagine a better way to fill it. So a great event, good for Memphis, all of that. But it also, they're being completely upfront and explicit that they hope this leads to a regular annual season tournament, and that the Memphis Tigers would be a part of that tournament. It would always be hosted in Memphis. The other teams would rotate. At a time when it's, you know, not that easy to get other teams necessarily to come to Memphis in other circumstances, to be able to do this as a tournament every year would just be remarkable. So I celebrate the event itself. I celebrate the ambition. But mostly I celebrate even more the spirit underneath it. Like, to think about what is possible, to not think about, oh, we can't do this, this is awful, this is terrible, this is a disaster, oh, I'll never work, whatever else. It's one thing to dream it up, That's one thing. Then to dream it up and actually think, yeah, that'll work. We can make that happen. And to pull it off, it is an extraordinary display of optimism on the part of St. Jude and determination in order to pull this off. And not just St. Jude, all the people they worked with, St. Jude and the University of Memphis, and ESPN, and then the other schools. I saw Hitman Hoops reported that they went after, that they at least talked to some other schools, possibilities, who could be, might have been involved in this, including the University of Tennessee and including Kentucky, both of which evidently, according to this report, what he tweeted out, turned down the opportunity. But listen, UNC is one of the biggest brands there is, so I couldn't be more thrilled that all this is happening. Now the trick is, it'll certainly only become a regular event. It may not anyway, but there's no chance of becoming a regular event if the first time doesn't work. And so Rick Shadyac, who's the CEO of ALSAC, who I talked to the other day about this, he was very clear. He said, we hope our corporate sponsors step up, and we hope people step up and buy tickets. They need people to step up and buy tickets, and they aren't going to start with a season ticket base. So there might be games when you've looked at the Memphis Tigers playing, and you say, there's not that many people there. That's at least starting from a season ticket base. They're going to be starting from zero. So there is a lot of work to be done in terms of selling tickets to this event. Now, is it going to bring in casual fans who want to see the Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks? I think so. Is it going to bring in some fans who want to see North Carolina and the Tar Heels? I think so. I think that'll happen. But it'll mostly have to be Memphis fans who are motivated to see their basketball teams and then also to support this event. So that's sort of what we led off with today, and I wanted to circle back to celebrate how notable it is, but to underline how important it is that it is now actually supported. It's also, by the way, Jeffrey, given what happened last week, kind of nice to be talking about something else.
Yeah,
when it comes to Memphis basketball.
Agreed.
Right? Like, in instead of just sitting here waiting for the NCAA to hammer to come down.
What's next?
Obviously, what's next is, the coaching, hires and all that stuff is unfolding. Instead of dreading the bad thing that's coming up next, to actually have this fabulous thing to think about, talk about, and celebrate, it gives a whole new approach to the start of the season.
We have something
to look forward to. And obviously they play in Alabama. That game's in Huntsville in an exhibition. And that one you can also go to. But you can see your Tigers right here at FedEx Forum. I did see someone, like I said, and thank Penny too. I don't know one way or another if Penny had much to do with this. He obviously had to go along with it. He had to be supportive of it. And once upon a time, early in Penny's tenure, you would have said, this is part of the glow of having Penny. This is what you get when you have Penny as your head coach. You get these sorts of high-profile events. I don't know now if Penny's presence, it doesn't hurt, but I don't know that. I don't know how much Penny's mere presence had to do with the success of pulling this off. I do know that a lot of the people who were involved with making this happen early, no longer on his staff.
Yes.
I mean, Garrett Kelly was one of the, was instrumental. Chris Boyson told me that he brought this up at a Memphis basketball game last year, and Garrett Kelly immediately, that everyone, like, and by the way, a lot of them aren't here. Laird isn't here either, not because he was canned, but because he went off to Missouri. But Bill Hardgrave, who's the president of the university, and Laird Veach, and then Garrett Kelly, who's no longer on the staff, and what, like, those guys, people who weren't here did a lot of the heavy lifting to make this happen, and I know are still invested in it. Because even when people come through here, and maybe for one reason or another it doesn't work out, or maybe it does work out and they just get a better job, if they've spent time at St. Jude along the way, they tend to stay connected with St. Jude. We saw it in Powell, we saw it in we see it with various athletes, coaches, and whatever who come through, that connection is so powerful that they remain connected. Anyway, I just want to applaud everyone who had anything to do with pulling that off, because it is a terrific event. We haven't at all, Jeffrey, talked about the weekend. We'll do this more tomorrow. The weekend of college football that lies ahead of us. is Alabama, Wisconsin? Is that like what? Obviously, here it's Memphis, Florida State.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's clearly the headliner. And by the way, Tulane's going to be playing Oklahoma.
Yes.
That's another one.
Also, UTSA is playing Texas. I don't know if that's a good thing, though.
And UTSA is playing Texas. I don't know if that's a good thing. South Florida's going to get Miami, but is that next week?
That's next week. They go to Hattiesburg on Saturday.
They play at Southern Miss on Saturday. But if you're looking around, it's while you're getting to prove your mettle against Florida State, see what Tulane is doing against an Oklahoma team that struggled last week, right?
Yep.
And then South Florida will have Miami next week. You got Alabama, Wisconsin. You got Ole Miss, Wake.
LSU at South Carolina.
That's suddenly interesting, right?
Yep. What's Florida going to do?
And by the way, game day, South Carolina?
So they were planning on going to Lexington, and then South Carolina beat the ever-living snot out of Kentucky. So they were planning on Georgia, Kentucky, and
you never would have said bingo card,
yeah.
Right? ESPN at South Carolina this weekend.
Correct. They don't like doubling up on the Big Ten SEC. So Fox is going to be at Madison, and
which
so,
is better, by the way, game day, TNT pregame NBA show,
TNT.
You don't like game day?
Game day's just gotten to be it's too much. It's like a bad fruit salad. Everybody's got
it's
like
a bad fruit salad.
Yeah, it's like everybody's got a little gimmick, and I mean, it's still like what we watch.
It's still great fun.
Like the picks are still.
I tell you one thing, I really enjoyed this year. I like the picks at the end of the week one. Whatever it was when it was Notre Dame Texas A&M, right?
Yep.
When they were there in College Station, and there's some video of Nick Saban looking, the people love to dwell on, as McAfee's doing his crazy stuff and Saban's rolling his eyes.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of it, Nick Saban said, I haven't been part of this. I've never been able to be a part of this. And it's a blast. And he looked like he meant it when he said that. It was like to be able to see Nick Saban having that much fun, being able to enjoy what really college football is to the rest of us.
Yeah. The experience, yes.
I really like
that. No, I agree. I think it's improving. Like, I think adding Saban was a value added. It's just part of what made College Game Day was three dudes at a desk on a campus. And now it's too much. It's gotten so big that it's like, okay, we got too much going on here.
Gotten a little bit bloated.
Yeah.
Anyway. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Drew Hill, of course, will join them today. DeMichael Cole is going to be hanging out with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Eric Hastein, Jason Smith will join us. It's Thursday, so Jeff will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work's done.